Drew Pearson entering the Hall of Fame. There he is with our guy, Nui Scruggs. Pearson will have Roger Staubach as his presenter for induction in the Hall of Fame. And my first thought was, David Baker, watch your back. Anytime Roger's around, there's a chance Drew Pearson is going to start pushing people down. At least David Baker is Andre the Giant reincarnated and doesn't have to worry about Drew Pearson or anyone else pushing him down. Nate Wright had to worry about it once upon a time. Now, I'm not bitter. It's not bitterness. It just is a part of me that will never go away. Nui responded to my tweet on the matter as saying, welcome to Pettyville. This isn't petty. This is ingrained in my being. I still replay this in my mind every day. I don't even need to see it anymore. There goes that orange. People think that's a flag. That wasn't a flag. Somebody threw an orange because they saw the gross and blatant infraction of the rules, Shireen. There's a slow motion.
Well, Drew,
we always gotta
one
have
of the reasons Drew Pearson is going in the Hall of Fame is right there, Mike. And nobody.
Paul Krause, get your ass over there. Paul Krause, get your ass over there.
Paul Krause was late getting over.
Hey, for the first time ever, I noticed Paul Krause pulls up to complain about the interference when he could have tackled the guy. He stopped running. Paul Krause!
I told you that.
Why?
On the break. Paul Krause was late getting over. Everybody forgets about Eric, that they blame Eric Wright. It was Paul
he
Krause
stopped.
Late getting Nate Wright.
He stopped because he'd never seen offensive pass interference so blatant before. That's why he stopped. He was waiting for the replay official 45 years into the future to buzz down and say that it was pass interference. Oh, well. Anyway, congrats. And I was going to say I say all of that in good fun. I don't. I'm still pissed about it, but I try to have fun with it. That's part of my therapy. We've had Drew Pearson on. We've talked to him about it. He's basically admitted that he did it. It's not like there's anything that can be done about it now, but I'll continue to complain about it until the day that I take my final breath. And some of you may wish that would happen sooner rather than later. So too bad for you until I do die. Anyway, let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys a little bit. And look, we got to give Shireen some props here. You made the presentation that got him over the hump. You stood up in that room full of, the old school football types. They're all scrutinizing. Well, it wasn't done. It was done virtually, so you didn't have to stand up in the room this year. But they know who we mean. Congratulations. You got Drew Pearson through, notwithstanding his blatant violation of the rules in 1975.
Well, it was a long wait for him, 33 years, and I also presented him on the centennial class when he didn't get in, so there was some guilt there for perhaps not having a good enough presentation, although it was a different committee on the centennial class, but glad that his wait's over, 33 years, he deserves to get in. He was on the 1970s all-decade team, the only player off of that team, first-team player that wasn't in the Hall of Fame, and we've now righted that wrong, and Drew Pearson is going to get his rightful place in Canton this summer. It's going to be exciting.
He's one of the Cowboys players who did number 88 justice. Others include Michael Irvin and Dez Bryant, now C.D. Lamb wearing that number for the Cowboys. Let's talk about where the Cowboys currently are. They continue to be the betting favorites to win the NFC East, and who knows?
Always.
Who knows? In that division, who knows what's going to happen? Let's look at them position by position. And we've got Dak Prescott coming off of the badly broken ankle. There's no veteran presence on the roster behind him unless we count Cooper Rush. I mean, he's older than the guy who would just be drafted this year, but it's not like he has a ton of experience. They've also got Garrett Gilbert and Ben DiNucci. Should they go out, Shireen, and bolster that position with somebody who would be game ready to come in and make a difference if there's any type of a setback or new injury for Dak Prescott?
Well, you know, I know Jason Garrett didn't necessarily do that. He had these young guys behind Dak Prescott, aside from the Tony Romo year when Dak Prescott wasn't even supposed to play as a rookie and Romo got hurt in the preseason and then Wally pipped. But, you know, Mike McCarthy wanted that veteran there last year, Andy Dalton, and what did it do for the Cowboys, Mike? They won 6 games. So, you know, when you lose your starting quarterback, normally, there aren't many Nick Foles or Earl Morrills to come in and save the day and get you to the playoffs and get you a championship. So I don't know that you, if you're the Cowboys, if you really want to go out and spend another $3 or $4 million for a backup to Dak Prescott, who, by the way, had played every game in his career until last year, the unfortunate ankle injury in week five. So if it's me, I'm going to go with those other guys. I thought Garrett Gilbert in his first career start looked pretty good against the Steelers. He almost won that game for the Cowboys. So I think maybe they have something in him. But look, if they lose Dak Prescott, they're not going to the playoffs anyway. They're not going to get another Super Bowl, which they've been seeking now, as we know, since 1995. So I'm fine with who they have. I do think they'll sign one. We know they looked at Jeff Driscoll, and now they have who's coming in now for them? Played for the Packers is coming in to visit now, Mike. Who's the backup?
Well, not Brett Hundley.
Brett Hundley, thank
UCLA. You. UCLA.
I just had a brain fart. Yeah, Brett Hundley's coming in now, and they may end up signing Brett Hundley because they know their offense.
It's not the first time that's been said on this show. It sounds very different when you say it than when Chris Sims says it. I'll just say that. But yeah, I almost said Blake Bortles there, but he's the property of the Green Bay Packers.
That's who
Don't
I was
you touch
thinking
Blake
of.
Bortles.
Yes.
Don't you touch Blake Bortles. He's under contract. You shall not tamper with Blake Bortles. You mentioned Nick Foles, though. Look, he's the guy who's lost and forgotten on the depth chart in Chicago now, and I know they'd love to unload him. He's got some guaranteed money on his contract still. I think Nick Foles would be a hell of a choice to be your veteran backup to Dak Prescott, because if Prescott would get injured, we know what Nick Foles can do. We know what he can do as a starter,
yeah,
and we don't need to see it again. We know what he can do as a backup, and you'll want to see it again. If it's a true backup quarterback situation, quarterback gets injured, Nick Foles can make it happen. I just think that they need to be better prepared, and especially because they did it last year and it worked. They had Andy Dalton and they needed him, Shireen. Now, maybe they look at it and say, well, it didn't make a damn bit of difference at the end of the day. We still didn't make the playoffs, so we may as well give these young guys some reps. If we're not going to have Dak, just screw it. Put these young guys out there and let's see who survives. Maybe that's their mindset.
I do think McCarthy wants that veteran. I think he agrees with you on that front, Mike, that he wants a guy. And I'm with you. If you're going to go try to win and get a veteran, there's no better guy as a backup in the NFL than Nick Foles. I mean, he serves that backup position very well. And then when you need him to play, he does it very well. He's never started more than 11 games in his career. He's not a starting quarterback. But if you need him in a brief period of time, he can get it done. So if you're going to get a veteran guy, none better than that to go get. I think he would be great in your quarterback's room. I think he could teach Dak Prescott some things, especially about how to win in the postseason, something the Cowboys haven't done in a really long time, and Dak Prescott hasn't gotten him to a championship game. Yeah, if you're going to do that, go get Nick Foles. He's much better than Brett Hundley, who I can't even remember his name half the time.
Well, they still got plenty of time to figure it all out, and maybe that's what they ultimately will do. Let's look at the rest of the offensive roster. And receiver is a spot where they're loaded. Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, C.D. Lamb. They've got competent, and you could argue far more than competent tight ends in Blake Jarwin and Dalton Schultz. There was the talk before the draft about Jerry Jones being spent with Kyle Pitts. That's the last thing they would have needed to do with the 10th overall selection in the draft. And they ultimately traded down a couple of spots with the Eagles. Receivers among the best, top to bottom in the NFL, Shireen.
Yeah, I would list the Bucs ahead of the Cowboys, but there's not many teams I would list above the Cowboys. It does intrigue me, Mike, and we've talked a lot about this. Is this Amari Cooper's last year in Dallas? I think Michael Gallup might be their best receiver on the roster. I've said that for a couple years now. I think he's really, really good. I think he can be a number one receiver. He hasn't gotten many opportunities in Dallas simply because Amari Cooper's been ahead of him, and then last year CeeDee Lamb came in too. But I think Michael Gallup is really good. So could you move on from Amari Cooper after this year and try to re-sign Michael Gallup, who's going in the last year of his contract? Or do you try to move Michael Gallup at some point before the trade deadline and get something for him? I think he could be a guy that you could move and really get some compensation for. So that intrigues me about this receiving core. What's the future of this receiving core? How does Dallas see this? Is Amari Cooper there for the long term, or is this his last year in Dallas, which essentially it could be based on his contract, Mike?
I think this is his last year in Dallas. I think when they signed with that five-year, $100 million contract, when you looked at it, it was a two-year, $40 million deal. And between Gallup and Cooper, I think you pay Gallup and you keep Gallup and you let Cooper move on, and maybe they try to trade him. No one is going to take on 3 years, $60 million for Amari Cooper. And I feel like the Cowboys got they painted themselves into the corner with Amari Cooper when they gave up the first-round draft pick for him, and he was on the back end of his contract, and they had to keep him. Remember, they didn't franchise tag him. And supposedly other teams were offering more. Still, $20 million for Amari Cooper was a lot. He's going to get 2 years of it, and then I think that the Cowboys are going to move on. We'll move on to the running back position. Tony Pollard has been very good. Ezekiel Elliott hasn't been the guy that he was early in his career. It started to go in the wrong direction after the holdout that he engaged in that we fully supported a couple of years ago to get the contract he deserves. Where is that running game right now?
Well, that's a great question, Mike. Is it the offensive line, which was missing all those guys last year, or is it Ezekiel Elliott? Is he on his last legs? And there are two things about him that concern you. One is the fumbles, obviously. He had six last year, lost five of those. He hasn't had a big fumble problem, but he did last year. And the other thing, Mike, is long runs, the 20-plus yard runs. He had a bunch of them, 31, I think, at the start of his career. And over the last 2 years, 2 years ago he had four, last year he had three, and in the last 2 years his longest run is 27 yards. He just hasn't been that same guy that he was early in his career. He averaged 4 yards a carry last season and 65.3 per game. So that concerns me, all of those things. And Tony Pollard, frankly, might have been their best running back last year. And if they determine that he is, they're going to have to get Tony Pollard the ball more than Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah. And you just have to wonder how much longer Elliott's going to be on the team. Although this year, his presence beyond the fifth day, I think, of the league year in March, that kicked in salary guarantees for next year. Those are the great contracts. The ones where if you're on the team March of this year, your salary for the following year, not the upcoming season, but for the following season, 2022, becomes fully guaranteed. That's when you have true protection. That's when you know you're going to get your money, and that's when you know you're going to be on the team. But they need to get Ezekiel Elliott back to what he used to be, or maybe this year will be his last year with the Dallas Cowboys as Tony Pollard gets closer and closer to the expiration of his rookie contract. That offensive line, it feels like some of those guys are just, you know, being held together by duct tape and old glue. How much longer can they get the most out of Tyron Smith and Zach Martin and Lyle Collins, especially Smith and Martin? I thought maybe they would really try to bolster the offensive line this offseason, recognizing that the window's closing on that group that was so dominant not that long ago, Shireen.
Yeah, definitely, Mike. And you look at all the games those guys missed, particularly at the tackle positions, and how bad they were there without Tyron Smith and without Lyle Collins. Now, Lyle Collins is still young. Of course, Tyron Smith's still young, 30 years old. But, you know, he just seems like he has so much wear and tear, Mike, with back injuries and neck injuries, bunch of stingers. Those things don't get better over time, unfortunately. So I hope he has another few years in him, because he was dominant in his day. He was on the all-decade team, an outstanding left tackle, the best in the league, but he's just been injury prone over the last few years. So we'll see how much longer he can go. And then you worry a little bit about Zach Martin, frankly, because he had the neck injuries last year. So those guys just need to hold up another couple years, and it's going to be time to rebuild that line not very long down the road, because they're starting to show some of that wear and tear.
Defensively, the Dallas Cowboys were not good last year. So bad that Mike Nolan was fired after only 1 year on the job as the coordinator. Now, Dan Quinn is in. The Seattle defense re-embraced by the Cowboys. Do they have the personnel to make it work, regardless of who the coordinator is, regardless of what the scheme is? Do they have the people on that team, defensively, Shireen, that are good enough to complement the offense so that, you know, every game isn't 55-52.
Well, they used all those draft picks on defensive players and did a lot in free agency to add some guys, Mike. So We're going to find that out. I do think they're certainly better at the linebacker position with Micah Parsons, who, by the way, is going to play middle linebacker, which leads you to wonder what's going to happen to those other two linebackers. How do they delve up the other snaps with Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith, who, by the way, they've spent a lot of money and a lot of draft pick compensation on. So that's going to be interesting how that linebacker position plays out. But I do think Micah Parsons makes them better. The biggest thing is Dan Quinn. I just think he's a really good defensive coordinator, Mike. I do think he's going to make a difference with this defense. They're going to be better. I mean, you could have put me or you in there and they would have been better this year simply because they gave up the most points in franchise history last year. We could have made them better this year.
What do you want to do on this play? I don't know, blitz. What I do every play on Madden, goal line, man, blitz. And you either sack the quarterback or you give up a touchdown. At least you know where you stand at that point. Hey, look, the Cowboys are going to find out right out of the gates whether their defense is any better because they get to go to Tampa Bay and take on the Buccaneers. I'm sure Dan Quinn's thrilled about seeing Tom Brady, the guy who took two rings away from Quinn. Not one, but two. Super Bowl 49 and then Super Bowl 51 when Quinn went from defensive coordinator to the Seahawks to the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. But look, the Cowboys continue to be the favorites to win that division. And it dawned on me at one point last week, you know, there are now three games on the schedule that are tied to where you finished the prior year. And because Washington won the division, they end up playing the Packers and the Saints and the first place team from the East, the Buffalo Bills, while the Cowboys get the Patriots and the Vikings and the Falcons. So that, you know, that those three games may be the difference when you're talking about this meat grinder of a division. Maybe the Cowboys getting a little bit of an easier road is all it takes to overcome Washington this year, Shereen. They could win the division. They could get a chance to lose in the playoffs short of the NFC Championship game and extend that streak to 26 years.
And Mike, every year we talk about the Cowboys, right? And a lot of it is the hype. And Jerry hypes them. He likes talking about the Super Bowl. And you know, winning a division title is not what they're after. Since 1995, they haven't gotten even to a championship game. That's what they're after, to take that next step. But I don't know if this roster is good enough to do that right now. I do think they have the best quarterback in the division, which is why I think they are the favorite to win that division right now. But there are a lot of questions, a lot of ifs, a lot of things have to work out. If they do, I think the Cowboys win the division. If they don't, I think it's a lot like last year, and we're looking at another mediocre team and Mike McCarthy being on even hotter seat than what he is right now.
Let's take a quick break. When we return, a game of which doesn't belong and why on this Friday edition of Pro Football Talk Live.
I don't have any plans on retiring. It's just, when do I not want to go back to work? All right, when I'm not excited about going back to work, then I'm cheating somebody. I'm cheating the Glazier family. I'm cheating my players. Right now, I can't wait to go back to work. So I don't know when that's going to happen. But no, I'm not tied to any players. I could get extremely excited about having another young quarterback and going to war with one. I'll be honest with you. I'd be excited to take Blaine Gabbert and go to war because I love Blaine Gabbert. I think he's the most underrated player in the NFL. And when it's not fun, then it'll be time.
Bruce Arians proving yet again that it's always 5 o'clock somewhere with his comment about Blaine Gabbert. Are you serious, Bruce? I think he's the most underrated player in the NFL. Blaine Gabbert? Blaine Gabbert. So, I love a guy that takes up for his players. I love a guy that views the glass as half full, even if it's half full of rum. But the news is he's sticking around. He's not going anywhere. I assumed that the longest he'd be with the Buccaneers was the duration of Tom Brady's career, although that may last another 5 years, who knows, and that possibly at some point he would hand the whistle to Byron Leftwich or Todd Bowles and walk away and let them take it from here. Sounds like a guy who, look, he's finally got it figured out after all those years of toiling, after those years of being denied head coaching opportunities because he was a little too brusque, a little too candid, a little too rough around the edges. He's enjoying it now. He's fallen into a perfect situation. Why would you walk away from it, Shireen?
Oh, my gosh. With this roster, Mike, the window's open for this team for a while. And after Tom Brady, they just got to find the quarterback. And I know that's what New England was saying, but this is a better roster than what the Patriots had. So when Tom Brady's ready to move on, this roster still should be pretty good with as young as these guys are and as much as they have these guys under contract for a while. Why would you leave if you're Bruce Arians, right? You think you can win a few more with this team.
You sit back and it runs itself. Byron Leftwich is in charge of the offense. Todd Bowles is in charge of the defense. You do the big picture stuff. You sit in your golf cart and you just preside. It's a great gig if you can get it. And he deserves it. He's put in the work. He's put in the toil. He's put in the years. He retired for that 1 year and he hated it. Even though he was involved in football, he was a broadcaster for CBS. He wanted back in. He got back in and he's staying in. I would definitely stay as long as Tom Brady's there. And then post Brady, you are going to have a grace period where, you know, 2-3 years you can coach the team and you don't have to worry about getting fired, especially if you deliver another championship. They're going to be happy to keep you beyond Brady's career, and maybe they stumble onto something with Kyle Trask or Blaine Gabbert or someone else. So I fully support it, Bruce. Coach as long as you want. Coach as long as you can. Let's start off our edition of Which Doesn't Belong and Why by staying in Tampa and looking at that quarterback depth chart. Three names on it: Tom Brady, Blaine Gabbert, Kyle Trask. Which doesn't belong and why?
Well, I'm going to go with Blaine Gabbert because he's the only one on the list who was a first-round draft pick, right? So that's who I'm going to go with. And he was 13-35 in his career as a starter, Mike. 50 touchdowns, 47 interceptions. I don't know what Bruce Arians sees in Blaine Gabbert, but he hasn't shown the rest of us anything to think that he's the most underrated player in this league.
If Blaine Gabbert becomes the starter at some point and has a really good year, would you vote for him for comeback player of the year? I already know the answer.
Yeah, probably not.
All right, I mean, the easy one's Brady. I mean, Brady's Brady. No one else is Brady. Brady stands out head and shoulders above all quarterbacks. And the question is, how much of his way, his approach, his work ethic, his leadership can rub off on these other guys? Maybe Blaine Gabbert just needed to spend a couple of years in the master class that Tom Brady puts on a consistent basis. Maybe he just needed to learn how to be an NFL quarterback. You know, these guys get sucked into the NFL. They get thrust into a starting job. They don't necessarily have anyone to show them what to do. That is such an underrated aspect of someone's individual NFL journey. Jameis Winston, after 1 year with Drew Brees, he could be a completely different quarterback this year. We don't know. He was so emotional when he was talking about Brees after Brees retired. We don't know how that incorporates itself into the way that a quarterback operates. So Brady is Brady. He's clearly separate from the rest. I'm curious to see how much of Brady trickles down to Gabbert and Trask and does set the stage for success in the future. All right, NFC head coaches with one Super Bowl title, which doesn't belong and why? Bruce Arians, Pete Carroll, Sean Payton, and obviously Mike McCarthy has a Super Bowl title, but not with the team that he's currently coaching for. Who doesn't belong and why from Arians, Carroll, and Payton?
I'm going to go with Arians because he's won the one championship he should have won as a head coach. When you look at Sean Payton and having Drew Brees all those years, and I have the record in front of me, I mean, 12 wins, 13 wins, 13 wins, 11 wins, the last 4 years, couldn't get it done, couldn't get that second championship with Drew Brees, which I just find unfathomable. And we all know that they got cheated out of that one against the Rams. They would have been back in the Super Bowl. They would have had a great chance to win that game if they had gotten back there, but they didn't. It was a bad call against them, and things have gone against them. You look at the Minnesota game when they lost that one at the end. They've just had so many bad things go against them, but they should have had more than one championship, frankly. And Pete Carroll, I mean, if not for the Malcolm Butler play, he's got two championships and should have two championships. So to me, Bruce Arians is the only one with that one championship who has won the one time that he should have won it. These other guys, to me, they should have more championships, Mike, than what they have.
Well, the bounty scandal screwed the Saints up for 2012 and for multiple years beyond that as they kind of rebuilt the defense after the lost season. The offense continued to be very good. And then that 17, 18, 19, excuse me, 20, I tried to hold that cough off as best I could. I apologize. But those last 4 years, to have those heartbreaking exits from the postseason. So I see where you're coming from. Arians had one team that was good enough to win it, and he took that team and he won. Although he had some good teams in Arizona, got to an NFC championship. I'll say Pete Carroll doesn't belong because, taking your point and really honing it down, Carroll's got no excuses for not having the team around Russell Wilson. And here's the other side of it. Carroll's the one of the three coaches who currently is in one of these messes with his quarterback. You know, Tom Brady wants to be in Tampa. Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston want to be in New Orleans. We don't know what Russell Wilson wants. We don't know how long he's going to be there. And there has been, I think, a sense that the Seahawks haven't really lived up to the excellence that we saw 2012, 13, 14, especially 13, 14. And we're getting farther and farther away from the last time the Seahawks have made it to a Super Bowl. I don't think they've been back to an NFC championship since their last Super Bowl appearance, which it's getting deeper and deeper into the rearview mirror. All right, AFC head coaches with one Super Bowl title: Andy Reid of the Chiefs, John Harbaugh of the Ravens, Mike Tomlin of the Steelers. Which doesn't belong and why?
Well, I'm going to go with Andy Reid on this one because I think he's a Hall of Fame coach, and everybody was so excited when he finally won that first championship, right? But, you know, if he retired 5 years from now that we have the coaching category, I think he's in the Hall of Fame, and I think he's the one guy on that list. Even if you didn't have the coaching category, which just came in a couple years ago, I think he would still be a first ballot Hall of Famer. If not first ballot, maybe second, like Bill Parcells, I think, went in his second time around after he unretired, came back, whatever. But I do think that Andy Reid would be a pretty automatic choice to go into the Hall of Fame, whether the coaching category was there or not, just what he's done, the wins he has. I mean, he just keeps compiling them, and I think this is a coach that's going to win more than one Super Bowl. Those other guys have won their Super Bowls. They've had some great teams around them. They're not Andy Reid. They haven't quite done what he's done yet, Mike.
He's been a head coach in the NFL every year since 1999, and I remember when the Eagles not just made Andy Reid the head coach, but basically gave him the keys to the franchise, put him in charge of the football operation. My reaction was, who the hell is Andy Reid? That was before I was in the business, but that was the widespread reaction. Nobody knew who Andy Reid was for the most part. We found out fairly quickly he's had great teams pretty much every year since 1999. I'll say John Harbaugh just because he's the guy who was the special teams coordinator. He had 1 year as a position coach, defensive backs coach, just as like a palate cleanser because nobody hires special teams coordinators to be head coaches. It's amazing to me that that still is the case. We hear the arguments from time to time. Special teams coordinator used to dealing with guys on both sides of the ball, the closest thing of any of the three coordinators to a head coach because you do have to pull a team together. You don't have your little niche here, offense, defense. No, you have to know everyone. You have to work with everyone. You have to motivate everyone. And Harbaugh, despite having some offensive coordinators who weren't among the best football minds available, still contending teams, relevant teams, Super Bowl win, and in the conversation on a regular basis. So I think for that reason, Harbaugh stands out, Shireen, because of that special teams background. Aren't you amazed that that really hasn't caught on? Dave Tobe, the special teams coordinator in Kansas City, he kind of was on the fringes of consideration at one point, but none of these special teams guys can punch through.
It is amazing, and so many of them want to become head coaches, and they just haven't gotten that opportunity, Mike. And I thought that Harbaugh would open the door for these guys to get more of those opportunities, and it just hasn't happened.
All right, one more topic real quickly, which doesn't belong and why. Quarterbacks entering their fourth years and in line for contract extensions, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, which doesn't belong and why.
Well, I'm going to go with Lamar Jackson because he's the guy with the MVP award, right? And he's the guy that I think the Ravens are sold on despite being ranked last in passing yards in the NFL last season. So I think he's going to get his extension. I think Josh Allen's going to get his extension. I think Baker Mayfield gets his, but I do still have a little bit of a question about Baker Mayfield. Just is he going to do what he did at the end of the season? Is he going to continue to take that next step? The Browns sound convinced that he's going to do that. I'm going to be surprised if they don't wait to make sure that that's the case, though, Mike.
You know, Andrew Berry, the GM of the team, recently with the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, talking about these issues of when do you sign the quarterback and is it a cautionary tale? What happened with Carson Wentz and Jared Goff? Sims and I talked about this yesterday. Yes, it is a cautionary tale. You better be damn sure when you make that move. If you're sure about the guy, you get him signed after 3 years. If you're not sure, you'll wait. To me, Mayfield stands out because the Ravens should be sure about Jackson. The Bills should be sure about Allen. I don't, because of 2019, and because it took him a while in 2020 to really reach that high level, I'd want to give it one more year. And I know it's going to cost me if I wait, but I want to give it that one more year and see if he can play all year long like we saw him at the end of the season. And if so, he's a guy you never let go. But at the end of the day, it's all based on merit, except for the 90th spot on the Jaguars roster. And merit is what's going to deliver a contract for Baker Mayfield, because you don't want to get yourself in a position where you've forked over the huge money and you get a few years into it and you ask yourself, what the hell are we doing? Here's what we're doing. We're taking a break. When we return, the draft as promised. Julio Jones had the great catch in Super Bowl 51 that felt like the dagger and wasn't. The all-time great plays produced by the team that ultimately lost the game. We'll draft that next here on PFT Live.
England trying to get there. Matt up in the pocket. Now going to cut it loose, looking for Julio. What a catch! Spectacular catch! Unbelievable!
That will live in Super Bowl history right there.
Yes, it will live in Super Bowl history. The problem is there was bigger history to be made later that day. That was the moment I said the game's over. That was the drive that went haywire after that with the questionable play calls and the execution. It opened the door for the Patriots to tie the game. I thought the game was over at that moment. It's one of the great plays of all time. It made in the Super Bowl by the team that ultimately lost the game. Today's draft, all-time great plays coming from a team that ultimately lost the game. Shireen, you've got a trivia question for me.
I do, and I saw the question, and I have just seen the answer, and I actually got it right, so the pressure's on you not to be Jan Brady on this. Which running back, Mike, which running back holds the record for the most rushing yards in a Super Bowl loss? Hint, the opposing defensive coordinator was not mad about it.
You know, I probably would have had a hard time without the hint. But that was the whole game plan for Super Bowl 25. Bill Belichick had to get the Giants defense to buy into the idea that if we let Thurman Thomas have 100 rushing yards, we'll win the game. They thought he was crazy. They finally bought in. It worked. The Giants were able to slow down the passing attack of the Bills by letting Thurman Thomas run. So Thurman Thomas, final answer.
And how many yards did he have, Mike?
They tried it again in Super Bowl 36, but Mike Martz wouldn't take the bait. He continued to try to throw, even though the Patriots had dropped like eight guys into coverage on every play. All right. This is one of those days where there really isn't a clear cut. I've got to take this one. I'm going to go with, you'd think I'd be prepared for this. I'm going to go with the catch that was made by Jermaine Kearse in Super Bowl 49.
Yep.
Because that was the moment. It felt like the David Tyree catch all over again. The holy crap, he's laying on the ground. The ball's bouncing around. He did what? He has the catch. And that just set up the dramatic finish with the interception from Malcolm Butler. But that was the one huge, to me, momentum swing. Hey, the Seahawks are actually going to do it. They're going to repeat as champions. They're going to win this game. And they failed to punch it in. And that play, I think, gets forgotten because the Malcolm Butler play was far more memorable. But that, to me, was the moment where I thought, wow, the Seahawks are going to win.
And Malcolm Butler actually tipped that pass, and it was still caught by Jermaine Kearse. And Jermaine Kearse has since said that he thinks it was the greatest catch in Super Bowl history and would be remembered for that if the Seahawks had held on and won the game. And they probably would have. They were at the 5-yard line at that point. You remember Marshawn Lynch gained 4 yards on first down. And then we all know what happened with 26 seconds left. The Seahawks unfortunately decided to throw the ball, and Malcolm Butler stepped in and saved the day. So I agree. I think that was the number one choice, Mike, and everybody forgets about that play.
All right. What is your number one choice?
You know what? I think I'm going to go with poor Leon Lett, because we all remember the Super Bowl. The Cowboys could have set the record for the most points in a Super Bowl win. And what happens? Leon Lett's running and he decides to celebrate, and Mr. BB comes in and takes the ball away from him. And perhaps one of the greatest plays in Super Bowl history that definitely will be forgotten, because the game was already over. It was a rout. It would have been an even bigger rout, but what a great play it was. Despite the fact that the Buffalo Bills got killed in that game.
Yeah, that was the ultimate hustle play from Don Beebe. And it's because the game was otherwise a blowout, that's the one play that still resonates to this very day. And there it is. Frank Reich in at quarterback for the Bills. Ball comes out. Yep. There goes Leon Lett. And you can already see what's coming. The ball's there in that left hand. And then he decides, as he gets close to the end zone, he's going to hold it down low, and BB knocks it out. Next one for me, Super Bowl 43. The moment where I said, holy crap, the Cardinals are going to beat the Steelers and be a 9-7 team that wins the Super Bowl. Larry Fitzgerald catching the slant pass and then shot out of a cannon down the middle of the field at Raymond James Stadium. Again, just like with Julio Jones, just like with Jermaine Kearse, that's it. It's over. That's it. That's the moment. And unfortunately for the Cardinals, for Larry Fitzgerald, it wasn't.
And Santonio Holmes saved the day, obviously, for the Steelers in that game, made an even bigger play, Mike. And that's, you know, these plays get forgotten because there's a bigger play after that play. And that's what happened in that Super Bowl. I'm going to go with one. I'm going to change the tone here. One that's not in the Super Bowl, and that's Odell Beckham's great one-handed catch against Brandon Carr. I was there in the stadium, and it's one of those where you go, did he just do what I think he just did? And it was on the far side of the field, so you couldn't tell for sure, but Odell Beckham absolutely caught that ball. And by the way, he was interfered with by Brandon Carr. Great story off of that, though. A few years later, Brandon Carr was going to a charity event, and I was there, and this kid asked if he could take a picture with Brandon Carr, and Brandon Carr says, yeah, absolutely. He takes a picture, and right before the picture's taken, the kid goes like this, like he's Odell Beckham over the top of Brandon Carr. So Brandon Carr just kind of rolled his eyes and went on. But poor Brandon Carr is going to be remembered for that play forever. But guess what? The Cowboys won that game. Des Bryant outdueled Odell Beckham, caught his second touchdown pass with a minute and one left. Cowboys win the game.
You know, I had forgotten that the Cowboys even won that game. All you remember from that night is the Odell Beckham Jr. catch. I'm going to go back to the first Super Bowl that I ever watched a long, long time ago. There's that catch. Oh, he's getting pulled down. And what it just, that was, that's still, I get goosebumps seeing that now. What a catch. And if only Beckham could get back to that form with the Browns this year, maybe he'll get to make a catch like that in the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 7. And that was a flag, not an orange. Thanks, Pete. It was an orange. Yeah, it was an orange when it should have been a flag. Really? Next thing you know, they're going to play the damn play again. The Super Bowl 7 and the Dolphins, undefeated season, 14-0. Would have been a shutout. Would have been the only shutout in Super Bowl history. But for Mike Bass, and this really wasn't a spectacular play, but it is memorable. It was a touchdown for Washington because Garo Yepremian, after the bad snap on the field goal attempt, the ball's popping around in the air, and then he tries to throw a pass looking like Tim Tebow. I'm sorry, that was gratuitous. That was unnecessary. And the ball pops up in the air. Mike Bass grabs it and runs it in for a touchdown. Hell of a play. Losing effort because Washington otherwise had 0 points on the day.
That was a great play. And I'm going to finish with the Super Bowl too, Mike. I'm going to go to Super Bowl 34. Everybody remembers the last play of the game, right? When Mike Jones tackled Kevin Dyson at the goal line. But the play before that was really the one that set them up to have a chance to win the game. Steve McNair made just a brilliant scramble. I mean, he should have been sacked four or five, six times, and somehow manages to get out of it, found Kevin Dyson, and got him down there where they had a chance from the 10-yard line to win the game. It was a 16-yard game, had a chance to win the game, and, of course, they came up a half yard short, or we'd still be talking about that play that got him down to the goal line that got him a Super Bowl victory, but it didn't happen because of Mike Jones.
All right, a couple other ones real quick that I got to mention. That the Aaron Rodgers Hail Marys, multiple against the Cardinals in a game that Arizona won in overtime in the playoffs. The Devin Hester opening kickoff touchdown for the Bears in Super Bowl 41 when Tony Dungy decided we're not going to run scared, we're going to kick it to him. And I can't believe he didn't take this one. Hollywood Henderson ripping the ball away from Terry Bradshaw and running it in for a touchdown back in Super Bowl 13. We'll take a quick break and we'll wrap up this Friday PFT Live right after this. Things I learned today, Shireen Williams does not know who that guy is. He's the late Jim Varney, who played Ernest P. Worrell, and it all came up because, Shireen, I think that Disney could start a whole franchise. Tebow goes to camp. Tebow saves Christmas. Tebow goes to jail. That would never happen. Tebow scared stupid. Tebow rides again. Tebow goes to school. There were eight Ernest movies! And
no,
you didn't know who he was!
Tebow, though. He didn't play basketball.
Four of them were direct to video, but they still count. That's it. Everybody, have a great weekend. Thanks for some of your time.